This is Football. I'm Kevin Clark, doing a lot of episodes lately, but none of those episodes have had Kyle Long, one of my favorite media members, young media members. He's on CBS Sports. He's on the Greenlight podcast with our buddy Chris Long, his brother. Tremendous college career, NFL career. A lot of insight on his former team, the Bears. A lot of insight on the year he spent in Kansas City. I love this. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle Long.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Kyle Long is here, CBS Sports star, Greenlight podcast with his brother Chris, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, one of our favorites. First time we've ever created content together. What's going on, brother?
Yeah, I'm just chilling, man. I'm so happy we get to do this. We spoke about it last week via Twitter or X or whatever the hell we're going to call it, and I've been stoked about it. I told Kate, I was like, you have to remind me at 12:40 that we have to stop playing Fortnite because the baby goes down at noon. As you know, this schedule thing is important.
Yeah, of course.
We run like a Coach Coughlin ship here where it's, you know, 5 minutes early is on time. So we got that baby down, or she got it down 11. She got her down 11:55. We played Fortnite, and I was like, the vibes are good, but I got to get out of here. The vibes are going to be better on this pod.
How much gaming do you do on a daily basis?
That's it. I mean, it's been my anchor for a very long time.
No, of course.
I got, you know, when I went down to Florida State when I was 19, I just had so much damn fun, and I found that my free time would be better spent doing something a little less destructive. And while some would argue that it is destructive, I've met some of my longest lasting friends through gaming and guys that were in my wedding, stuff like that. So it's important to me to find new challenges, and I'm enamored with technology and the engines that are running these games and the developers that spend so much time. It's fascinating to me. So when I'm playing the game, I'm not just sitting there drooling down my sweatshirt, which sometimes I do, but a lot of it is just having an appreciation for it. Like when people go to the movies and they're like, well, how do they make this? You know, that's the same feeling I have, you know, playing video games. And same thing could be watching movies, because I was watching Mario earlier and I was like, this is this guy's brain in this universe. I mean, when they're riding down Rainbow Road and Peach asks Mario, she's like, do you guys do this where you're from? He's like, no, we don't drive on rainbows. That's somebody's brain. And that's what I like about gaming.
I've said this to friends in the past. My life would probably be dramatically worse if I was good at video games, because I love FIFA and I love Madden and I love NCAA football when they made it, and they'll make it again. But like, what the guard against me becoming addicted to video games is, I'll play for FIFA for like 5 hours. I have nothing to do, right? But then I'll go play online and I'll just get rocked like 7-0 by some like 11-year-old from Chile who's playing with Juventus. And I'm like, oh, I suck at this. I'm never going to be good. Time to go do obligations. Time to go
live. I always try to find new games for that very reason. And there's so many games. I use the PC. So like Steam is the apparatus in which you can acquire and download games. And my Steam library is so huge. Not because like I want to flex how many games I have. Yeah. It's because I suck at so many games. I have to continue to be imperial about my downloads, because we got to find the thing that's meant for me. Right. And to your point, you can only play FIFA so long and get your ass whooped so long before it's like, let me just go outside.
May I suggest golf if you want to just try new frontiers to get your ass kicked? All right. So let's talk about what's going on in football right now. I want to start here. The Eagles tailspin, I don't think I've seen anything like it. There were people who said, okay, the 2020 Steelers was like this. 2019 Patriots was a little bit like this. I don't know. Like, the talent level on this team was such that even if you thought they were fraudulent in the first half of the season, they did make the Super Bowl last year. They could have won the Super Bowl. Across the lines, they were really good. They had talent everywhere. They had a good roster. I'm curious, if you've ever been in this situation, could you describe what it feels like for a team to be in a tailspin and for us to be like, oh my God, we have no solutions here? Like, what? How do you process that as a player, Kyle?
Well, it's a great point. And to your point, I've never been on a team like that because I don't think, quite frankly, it's ever happened. And a team that was, what were they, 10-1 going into Kansas City? And I picked them to be undefeated going into the Kansas City game at the beginning of the year. Yeah. I said that and people laughed at me. And I was like, look, they're not the most dominant team in the league, but do they have guys that are alphas that can win at certain positions that are important at the game of football, like A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts, not to mention the guy who's retired last night, Jason Kelce. You've got the ultimate advantage when it comes to short yardage situations. Add that to the fact that you've got a guy who can pierce the armor of the defense with Lane Johnson front side, or he can make sure to cover up that backside double team in the zone game. They have the pieces to be dominant. I don't understand how you can't sustain that. And obviously the holes proved to be too much on defense. But when you're on a roster like that, they say don't listen to the noise.
Right.
And we were talking about Flight Simulator before the show started. And I was watching these videos the other day because I'm into the whole learning how to fly thing. And these instructors, they put the students into a tailspin. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if you pay attention to the audio, which they have, and the video, the passenger who is the pilot, who is a young pilot trying to achieve his certification, and then there's the OG pilot who puts him in a tailspin. And he's like, because I know how to get him out of this. To me, Nick Sirianni was the passenger in that situation, didn't understand how to get himself out of a tailspin. And I look back to some of the cocky things that he was doing early in the season. You go to Kansas City, you get a win, and man, oh man, his words spoke louder than his actions, I would say, in that game. We all knew that that game was tight, but Nick Sirianni was pretty loose. And I think his players saw it. Jalen Hurts, one of your leaders, if not your leader, outside of Jason Kelce, is kind of telling you to tone it down. I think that's where the house of cards starts to fall. And then you start to fulfill this prophecy that the outside world has, you know, they're delivering trash cans to your, to your facility. And they're saying terrible things about not just one guy. I mean, it's everybody. It's guys who you and I have a ton of respect for in this league. Darius Slay had a trash can named after him outside of the Philadelphia facility. Now, we've all been there, you know what I mean, like as players. But for Philadelphia, for whatever reason, it compounded over and over again. And by the end of this thing, we were looking at a team that we didn't even recognize.
I completely agree. I'm curious with the Sirianni thing because I got into it with someone in the league who really likes Sirianni. And I was not a huge fan. I just felt like some of his actions suggested, like, the Eagles are always going to be good because they have a good infrastructure and a good roster, and they have a good quarterback and they're strong on the line. So they understand how to win football games. It felt to me like Sirianni was maybe born on third base a little bit as far as taking that coaching job when he did. Now, he did good things the first 2 years, obviously, but his demeanor to me rubbed me the wrong way. And somebody, the person I was going at it with was like, well, it's because he's not doing the things we associate with being a coach. He's not stoic. He's a new age coach. He's different. I, not to quote Tony Soprano, whatever happened to the strong silent type? Like, I do think there's value in kind of the Belichick staring straight ahead leader of men thing. Can you speak on what kind of coach you like?
And it can be the fun lead. And I'm so with you. And that's a dynamite reference. When I got to the league, I had Mark Trestman. And he was as cerebral a coach as I've ever been around. And we had answers to everything. He paired his wisdom with a tremendous hire at offensive line coach Aaron Cromer. He had the assistant O-line coach Pat Meyer, who at the time was as brilliant as I've seen in blitz pickup.
Yep.
So you couple the blitz pickup with the Mark Trestman thing. But our hump that we had to get over was B. Marsh and Jay Cutler and obviously the holes on our defense. But he wasn't a leader of men in terms of getting in front of the offense and the defense at the same time and saying, Lance, shut up, stop laughing at me, you know, like, or cracking a joke back at Charles Tillman, who was one of the funniest funniest guys I've ever been around and best football players and teammates. But some guys aren't built to rein those dudes in. Some dudes can't command that room. And when I got to Kansas City, when Andy Reid got up and spoke, and, you know, he didn't speak much. He didn't have to speak much. But when he did, people listened. And to your point, whatever happened to the strong silent type? And while Andy's jovial and getting his guys cheeseburgers and how about those Chiefs, he's not Bill Belichick in that regard. He's still the strong silent type. And you don't want a bad representation of your team coming from your head coach.
To me, Andy Reid has said this before, and I think about it a lot. You don't have to do much to be a leader. He has said that if you can't fit everything you want to convey in a meeting on a one cue card, it's not worth saying. And I think that
I never heard him say that, but that's, you know, it's very precise as to the rules at which he follows.
Yeah, and like players are not going to sit there for 90 minutes and just listen to you just drone on and on. Your brother was on the show a couple weeks ago and talked about how there was one coach, that he liked that would have meetings so long that guys would sneak out back and get treatment and then come back because the lights would be off. And it's like sometimes guys just tune you out and all that stuff. I need to ask you, can you define what a coach losing a locker room looks like? Because I like to ask guys, and sometimes they have different questions and whatever, but like it doesn't matter if it's a head coach, a position coach, or a coordinator or whatever, when a group stops listening to a guy, it shows up where?
Well, I want to preface this with saying that there's no locker room, that there's no coach, that there's no player that is immune to maybe talking behind a coach's back.
Like any workplace, your boss.
I mean, we saw it go public about Andy Reid with LeSean McCoy, albeit none of it's true, and that's just, you know, wild. And I think LeSean maybe achieved what he was trying to achieve there, but every locker room has that to a certain extent. But when you lose a locker room, it's to your point, when you're not listening, when you lose the guys in the meetings, when you lose the guys when your buzzwords aren't buzzing anymore. You know, they don't have me on the edge of my seat. That's when you lose a locker room. And I've been in situations where the coach isn't completely to blame for the situations, but there are factions within the team that lose that. And obviously you just lose that unity in the locker room. There's division. There's some people that are his guy maybe. And they're going to stick it out and tough it out. And they're not, it's a never say die emotionally. They're not going to check out. And then there's some dudes that check out way early. And the more dudes you have that are checked out, and they believe in the self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, that's to me how it goes. It's like the other night when Matt LaFleur was like, we want the ball to start the game. We won the kickoff. We don't want it in the second half. We want it right now because I know who you are, and I think you know who you are, Dallas. Ooh. And when they got the ball and they scored, it became a track meet. It was like, it happened again. You could see McCarthy's face, right? Like, McCarthy's face, CeeDee Lamb, Aaron Andrews' glowing report about the guy, CeeDee Lamb, that she was so enamored with before the game is now like, oh my gosh, there's turmoil on the sideline. My report has gone sour, and I love EA. Great reporting, but that's a microcosm of that situation we're talking about, where people, even if you're in the playoffs, hosting a playoff game, or you're the Eagles and you're on the road and you had a skid, people start to not believe.
Yeah, it's a wonderful point. You were around the Chiefs, as you said, you were on the team, around Mahomes. Big game Mahomes, the demeanor in the locker room, the demeanor in the week, does it change? Is there like, I feel like it's funny because I think sometimes we associate like, you know, the Michael Jordan or the Mamba mentality or whatever. He comes from baseball where I think, and I've talked to him about this, it's a little more laid back. It's a little more like, all right, we're just going to take everything as it comes. He's just very even keel in that regard. Even his warm-up stuff comes from baseball, the long toss stuff he does. He really likes to keep it even keel. But does it change in January, early February?
The thing I love and respect most about Patrick is that he is so consistent. Right. And when you first show up, if you've never been around him, if you've never been around Travis, you've never been around Tyreek at the time, was there, if you've never been around those guys, you show up and you're like, they can't keep this up every day, right? Like, they can't keep this, they can't keep themselves up every day, right? It can't happen the whole season. And then week one happens and you're like, holy week two happens. Now you're week 10, week 11, they're doing the same thing. Next thing you know, you're in the playoffs. Right. And Patrick's still there early. He's still playing basketball with the guys in his underwear and his socks in the locker room before practice. So he's tight in the morning. You know, he's in there. He's regimented. But then he's the baseball guy
right
before practice. And then you go out to the blitz pickup. And he wants to murder your defense. And then in the stretch, you know, the stretch line, he's getting ready, but he's also with Travis or right. Chris Jones or whoever it is. And that's a testament to that locker room, but it's also a testament to his mental makeup, his professionalism, and his understanding of how important the moment is. And my dad always said, there's a time to work, there's a time to play. And I think there's never been an example in my career that was better at understanding that difference than Patrick and keeping things fresh throughout the season by dancing that line between go time and let's have a little showtime fun with it.
That's fascinating. I guess I have seen it in training camp, but never like behind closed doors on like November 3rd. Him testing his limits, Patrick testing his limits in practice and just saying, what can I do here? What can I do here? Now, those stories have become less special as he does this stuff on the field. Like, you know, 3 years ago, I was like, whoa, wait till you see this guy. And then even when he was playing, like, well, he still got stuff in his arsenal. We've seen most of it now. But give me the most impressive thing you saw from Patrick Mahomes in a practice.
It's so hard to put my finger. That's really tough. And I don't think I'll be able to answer
that's
that,
okay.
But I will say that there were 30 days where I couldn't wait to get out of the meeting to call my dad, because the post-practice meeting, to be like, I couldn't like show him film and stuff. I didn't want to like film iPad and send it to him, which I know a lot of people do, which I hate. That's another conversation we need to have. Practice squad guys posting Instagram stories of them breaking off some guy in practice, but I digress.
Next, because I have some thoughts on that, but go ahead.
I would get out of practice and I'd either call my wife or I'd call my dad or I'd call Chris. I'd just laugh and he'd be like, what? And I'd be like, you know, it was like I worked at Area 51 and I couldn't quite talk about it. Whether it was trick plays we were working on or whether it was his communications with Andy, I think his understanding for that Andy's the head honcho and he keeps that in the forefront. At the time it was Eric Bieniemy and Patrick Mahomes, which was, you know, it was must-see TV, whether it was a practice, in the moment, the intensity, if there was something that Andy installed, something that EB agreed with, and then something that Patrick ran, and he didn't agree with it in totality, there was going to be a conversation that happened. And for the 3-4 seconds that there was a decision to be made, the intensity in that building is awesome. And that's what makes them great, because they challenge each other. And I haven't even mentioned the throws.
Yes, please.
The throws, the ability to scramble, the understanding of who is where on his offensive line and how he's able to use that to his advantage. It was almost like a Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist where they use their opponent's strengths against them. Well, you're going to beat this guy here. I have the answer to that equation. And when I do, Big 87 is going to be on the same page with me. Or Jerick McKinnon's going to have his eyes snapped around. And just making the entire locker room feel a part of something special. Because as you and I know, we could only dream of being in a locker room with Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Or being in the clubhouse with, you name it, the best baseball players. Or Shohei. And then Tiger Woods. Well, in football, albeit I didn't get to play in any football games with him, Patrick Mahomes was that for me. And I think I'm not the only one who has that feeling. And they get to share that locker room with him. And he's a man to them. And then he puts his helmet on and he becomes something else.
Not to stay on this for too long, but obviously, you know, the Reed offense, you mentioned it earlier. Give me something we don't appreciate enough about Andy Reid's offense and just the way he makes life easy. It was funny because last week Peyton was on this show And I said, how does Kyle make Brock Purdy's life easier? And I got a couple of emails, which I very rarely get emails. You always get tweets and DMs. I got emails from these idiots who were like, you're trying to shade Brock. You're saying that Kyle Shanahan makes life easy. I'm like, no,
I'm not going to apologize for complimenting
the coach.
Both of these.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Like, yes. Can I compliment Jordan Love and also say, and by God, do not forget that Matt LaFleur is like running his offense.
Yeah, exactly.
And people are like, yeah. You, man.
Don't you dare say his life is easy. Okay, but getting back on track, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, I mean, it almost seems like written in the stars, written in football destiny, right? But if you're talking to somebody saying, help me appreciate something I've never thought about with Andy Reid's offense, it's what?
Andy Reid gives the keys to the vehicle to Andy Heck, who is as underappreciated a staff member in the NFL as there is. And if he didn't have the seat that he currently has, I think he's a guy that could be a head coach. But it's not a sexy hire, and I'm an O-lineman. But the thing that I appreciate the most and that stood out to me the most about Andy Reid and his offense is that Andy Heck runs the run install.
Yep.
You know, when the offense defense split up different rooms, run install first. Andy Heck, you're up. Boom. And Andy goes up there, and he does his thing. And he's as impressive as an install. It's like a military – I feel like we're going to invade somewhere to take something that they have that's ours when Andy Heck gets up there. Mm. And then Andy Reid gets up there and he does the screens. The screens are Andy's baby. And if you watch the way that this offense has a feel for screens, it looks like a really good basketball offense. You know, like they just understand pass. Oh, open shot. Let's take it. Well, they understand spacing better than anybody. And it's because Andy Reid has an appreciation for the big guys. He knows better than anybody how this thing works. And his creative mind, being able to get certain guys in space, I've never seen it done like that. And to couple that with the offensive line install, and Andy Heck and him are kind of in lockstep there. It's the Andy and Andy show that's really impressive to me.
Wow. I take it you think Mahomes and Andy can win a Super Bowl with this receiving core?
Yeah, 100%. I think Patrick's so damn good he could throw it up to himself and
figure it out somewhere down the field.
You know what? We looked at the way this offense looked the other night, and Travis had three drops.
Yeah,
and they were still rolling, and the ball was a brick.
I know,
the ball was a brick. Okay, like that's do not let that go without notice. I mean, it's cold out; it hurts to get hit, but the ball is exponentially harder to catch and throw. So I look at those plays, and that's missed opportunities. That could have been every bit of blowout as we saw in Houston.
We'll be back with Kyle Long after this. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. There's a game coming up this weekend, Baker Mayfield against Jared Goff. And there's been some weird revisionist history on Jared Goff. He was discarded by the Rams. The Rams did not want him. They didn't even, like, there were rumblings that, like, he would have been in a competition with, like, whoever the Rams brought in the next year. They did not want him anymore. But both of those guys have had incredible recoveries due to coordinators who believe in them, franchises who surrounded them with talent, kept them upright in a lot of cases, and just let them be great. Now, obviously, they had a lot of talent, the first overall picks. Does that kind of thing serve to you as a good reminder on what, how to give guys second chances or third chances in some cases in a league that, that tends not to give them?
I think it serves as a reminder to players, particularly guys going through situations like that at lesser, in lesser known battles than the Baker Mayfields and the Jared Goffs, that, hey, if you just keep your, if you can keep your tank running, if you can keep your gun shooting and you can keep your tracks relatively uninjured, and stick around, whether it be a couple months or a couple years, you will get another crack at this thing. Don't burn bridges, and have faith. I think that's really important because, you know, this thing could be taken from you in a minute, but if you keep that positive mindset, like Baker Mayfield, every time we see him on camera, he's smiling, he's infectious, and he understands that he had to tough it out, and now he's in the he's in that hidden valley, that fertile crescent now of his career. And Dave Canales, what was he, coaching high school? Yeah.
That was the last time he was play caller.
Like Baker Mayfield was living in stadium. This guy was coaching high schoolers in Carson, California at the Home Depot Center. There's a lot going on there. And also, Todd Bowles, that defense, you know, what do they say? Outgunned, but not outmanned, I would say. That's how that Bucs unit has operated. And Todd Bowles, he's going to bring it. But I think the X factor is going to come down to protection. And I think Detroit's got too much. I think that they're bringing more men than the Bucs have. So that'll be interesting to watch. And Jared Goff is good for him, man. Keep kicking ass, Jared Goff. He's fun to watch. I hate the Lions. People think that I'm supposed to hate the Packers. I appreciate and respect the Lions. I hate the Lions. I hated playing them. They're a physical group. They are in lockstep with what the city's all about. They're a tough blue-collar group, but as a Chicago Bear, oh, I hate to see it. And the Packers are doing good, too.
We call that a segue in our industry because we're going to talk about the Bears here. I know it's painful. All right, so let's say tomorrow Kevin Warren says, I'm deputizing you as my assistant president. You have free reign over everything. What are your first few moves to fix the 2024 Bears? And that, I'm not just talking about roster. There's not talking about coaching staff. I'm talking about everything. Total franchise overhaul. If you wanted to, where are you going with it?
If I didn't know that Greg Roman was just interviewed.
I mean, it.
Like it.
I.
So, like, is this post ex?
This is right now. This is right now. This is right.
Okay. Tuesday, well, January 16th. I see that we have brought Greg Roman in, and I think that if you've got Justin Fields, it's obviously the smart decision. We may be. We've seen the ceiling in terms of throwing the football with Justin Fields, and it is tantalizing at times. There's no throw he can't make on the football field, but it's the consistency that's in question. One way to make a talent more consistent is look at a more blue chip stock. You know what I mean? Something that's not as high return. It's going to be lower return, but we can get it consistently, and that's the run game. Mm-hmm. And Greg Roman, better than anybody, is able to use the weapons that the Bears currently have. I think you can use Cole Kmet to an extreme advantage in that offense in particular. People have wanted more out of Cole Kmet, and I think that's the answer there. And better than Baltimore, we've got DJ Moore, and I think that we can add a couple pieces in the draft here. Obviously, the number one pick. If it's not Greg Roman in the building calling the plays, I'm going to go for Caleb Williams.
Right.
But let's stick with the Greg Roman theme. Justin Fields is in the building. That's our coach, Matt Eberflus. Okay, we got the OC now. You trade the first pick. I don't even know what you would get for that. And then you got to go get the best receiving option mm-hmm. so you can have two different archetypes at receiver out there. And I'd say go with what the Ravens have done. You can mix in some of what the Rams have done with 11 personnel. This year, I think that there's not a better offense at running 11 personnel than the Rams. I know it's two completely different sides of the country here. But if you do have to throw it, take some of Sean McVay's concepts. For everything else, Greg Roman, here's the headset. Have at it. Have Justin Fields run the offense you want. But my concern is obviously the health of Justin Fields moving forward. If this is the play that we're going to make, I think the high IQ play is go after the guy with the highest upside in the draft at the quarterback position, and that's Caleb Williams. You go hire the best coordinator available. The dude in it's Waldron in Seattle is really good. Obviously, we've seen that offense have success with a bevy of characters at quarterback and receiver. Do I have absolute faith right now that the Bears are making the right decisions? No. But I can't say that really any team can say that. Any fan base can say that about their team.
That's true. All right, let's do badass.
We were glazing Howie Roseman all season, right?
Well, he does have a nicer track record than a lot of the places, a lot of the GMs.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like now, I get what you're saying. They're like, blow it up.
I get what you're saying. No, we're all 2 bad months away from looking like idiots. Every single person. Yes. Bill Belichick just got fired. Pete Carroll just got fired. Like, Nick Saban is no longer coaching Alabama because he got
tired
of it.
Chris calls it the Freedom Caucus on Greenlight. It's fun. It's fun. And this year we get an exceptional cast of characters for the episode, right?
Exactly right. All right, let's do badasses. If you have the floor on the most badass person you've ever been around in football, typically that's a teammate. I do want to talk about some of the pass rushers you went against, but we can put a pin in that for a second. I will say this, and I don't know if I've ever said this publicly. The reason this segment exists is because I heard a story about a dinner one of your ex-teammates was at. And it was a bunch of people who weren't even football people. And one of your ex-teammates was just telling Jay Ratliff stories. That's all he was doing. And the entire tape, the buddy who was telling me was an NBA guy. And he was like, no one knew who Jay Ratliff was. And all they wanted was Jay Ratliff stories. They were just like, we don't know who this guy is, but we're just going to hear Jay Ratliff stories. So that, I just wanted to tell you, that's the inspiration for this story. You don't have to pick him. Obviously, that's a different genre of story. Yeah. But the most badass person you've ever been around in football is who, Kyle Long?
The most badass person early in my career, and
please.
The first guy was, we played against the San Francisco 49ers when they were, when it was Kaepernick, and the defense was, you know, loaded. And my job was to trap, their big three technique. And I think you know who I'm talking about. And he had an Anheuser-Busch the size of a postage stamp. On his, I can't remember if it was his left or his right bicep. Cowboy, who's what I'm talking about, and I'm gonna circle back to the end of the story. And this was like, you know, 23-year-old Kyle who was just like, "Tell me who to hit, and they're not gonna get up." And I trapped him. He didn't look, and I crushed him. And 10 years later, old Kyle Long is playing. I forget who we were playing. We might have been playing the Niners at Soldier Field, and our defensive coordinator was Vic Fangio. And he had a bunch of his guys, former Niners, at the game because this was the year 2018. We had the biggest, you know, we had the best defense in the league, and it was the sexy game to go to. Gosh, what is his name? Hold on a second.
Justin Smith.
Yeah, Justin Smith. Yeah. I keep thinking Justin Thomas. No. Justin Thomas. Justin Smith. So I'm in the tunnel after the game. We beat the Niners. And I'm walking up the tunnel, and I hear, what did he say? He was like, "Hey, pipsqueak," or something like that. And I was like, oh, my God, that's a big voice that I heard. So I turned, and it was the largest white man I'd ever seen in that tunnel outside of myself, if I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror. And it was Justin Smith. And he was like, "I owe you one from 2013. And he remembered the play. He remembered where it was on the field. And I was like, "What the hell are you doing?" He was like, "Other than coming back here to whoop your ass, I'm waiting for my old ball coach." And I was like, Vic Fangio. Like, for a second there, I was convinced that Justin Smith had, you know, just been waiting. Old Cowboy was waiting for me. And he couldn't have been nicer, but he was super badass. And then Ndamukong Suh.
Oh, my God.
You know, when I took my visit to the Bears, Aaron Cromer and Pat Myers, the two O-line coaches I was telling you about. They brought me in this room, and they're like, you know why you're here? And I was like, you know, I'm just get to know you guys, you know. And they were like, shut that door. They shut the door behind him. We sat down. I sat at the side of a desk. Cromer sat here. Meyer sat on that side, turned around looking at the TV. So we were all like cramped into a little coach's office. And you've been in these offices. They're little. And it's and then they put on an Ndamukong Suh, what essentially turned out to be a sack tape, but it was just like a Ndamukong Suh porno tape against the Chicago Bears from the last however long. Yeah. It was Jay Cutler getting massacred. It was our lineman getting ragdolled after the play, him just bullying our guys and playing good football, right? And he was like, we brought you here because we need somebody to try and stop him. And I was like, oh, things got more serious. It wasn't like I'm taking a visit to Chicago. Right. It was like, holy I'm going to be used as a weapon and means of war here soon with this staff. And they drafted me, and it was like the sand in the hourglass from the minute I got drafted was ticking away, leading to the Ndamukong Suh game. And I didn't know I didn't know how to prepare for it mentally. And that week, he was like, in the news, he's like, I can't wait to play Golden Boy. I was having a really good first week, 6 or 7 weeks. And he knew that. And he knew that I knew that. And he made a point to say it in the news. And it really got to me. And when we played him, he didn't look at me. He didn't say anything. And he got a sack on me in Detroit late in the game. He got me outside. I pushed him by. Cutler was getting flushed right. He got the sack. The place went crazy. And my, like, everything flashed back to that office. And I was like, I'm not doing my job today, am I? And we got a chance to go back and play him in Chicago. And, you know, I had some help from the center at times and the tackle and maybe the fullback and maybe the running back. But I like to think that I got him back a little bit in our second game at Chicago, although I think we lost. But he kept me up at night. I will admit it.
I could not imagine the pressure of just, you brought in to stop one guy. All right, last thing for you. It's called one rep back. I mean, maybe it was Justin Smith or Ndamukong Suh, but you get to relive one. Everybody's healthy. You're 28 years old, whatever it is. You're in peak physical condition. You get to go back, relive one rep of your life to get to do it over. What are you picking?
I would pick the play, the third down that led to the double doink.
Oh, God.
Because I think that Cody Parkey gets a terrible rap. And I think, you know, not only for trying to win that football game, like whatever the third down was, and now I'm going to go find it on True Media. I'm going to go find what happened, the play before the double doink. But make a better block or demand a run play behind me and make the block. Because, you know, Cody Parkey, I haven't talked to him. You know what I mean? That guy had a rough go at it, and he's that play is infamous, double doink. And I wish it didn't happen to us. And, you know, Chris got to celebrate on the field with all his teammates, and it was a real bad deal. Family pictures, I was faking the smile after that one.
Wait, you had to take a family photo after the double doink?
We played the Eagles.
Yeah, no, I know. They still made you do it?
It's not going to be like, boys, don't take a picture. You know the mom's got to be like, Howie, Chris, Kyle, get in there. Like, boom.
You had 8 months after that to take family photos. It was like one of the worst moments of your life.
You know what? It's not like family photos, but it's like, hey, let's get a pic.
I know.
I'm in a Rambo shirt where he got arrested for his mugshot. Like I was like, I'm gonna out Philly, so I'm gonna go different universe, Rambo instead of Rocky.
Oh wow,
it didn't work.
So are you all we're trying to say here is that Cody Parkey is innocent of all charges.
Really, that's it. The ball was tipped, and the offense didn't get down there, and we had plenty of opportunities to score. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I feel terrible for Cody.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's shorthand for a lot of the Bears' failures over the past couple of decades. Kyle Long, CBS Sports, Greenlight Pod, thank you so much for coming on, buddy.
You're the man. Thanks so much for having me. Got to get you on Greenlight soon again.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, man.
All right, guys. Thanks.
That was so great. Thanks, man.